All right. If you have a Bible, you can turn to Genesis 11. In due time, we'll eventually get there. And then you can get the handout that I gave as well. If you don't have one, raise your hand and somebody can get you one. But I think everyone has them. So take your handouts. And if you want to, turn to, again, Genesis chapter 11. We'll eventually, in due time, get there. And so, now, tonight we're going to start, you may have heard me on Sunday, not necessarily that makes that much difference, but tonight, having concluded our study on the life of John the Baptist, we're going to begin studying the Abrahamic covenant. So this will be part one for the note takers. And I'm going to follow a similar format. You'll probably notice as we go through the handout that I did for the Noahic one. I made a few little adjustments. So I was trying to think of a way that if it's similar, maybe it'll be a little easier to understand them. So hopefully in due time we'll cover them all. You'll have some similarities in terms of the structure of how I present it, at least. So I'll present it similar to the Noahic one, but we'll be looking at the handout tonight. So what we're going to do tonight is I'm going to give an overview of the handout, similar again to what I did with the Noahic covenant we looked at last fall, thereabouts. And then if you notice on the handout, there are five Roman numerals. We'll look at the introduction, and this will be mostly what I'll do is to give an overview, sort of a summary of where this occurs, the giving of the covenant in relation to Abraham's life. And then we'll look at Roman numeral 2 in terms of the Abrahamic covenant. I'll give you the verses on, we'll touch on where it's found, and I'll explain more on this later. And then we'll look at, again, what is a covenant? Is the Abrahamic covenant unconditional or conditional? And then the parties who benefit from the covenant. So mostly tonight is introductory, if it will, sort of set the stage. And then next week, if you want to read ahead, Roman numeral 3, we'll start looking at the contents. The contents of the Abrahamic covenant, if you don't know this, mostly are given in Genesis 12, 1 through 3. And then what happens as the narrative goes on, in other words, the story of Abraham and so forth, it gets added to. So there's more to the original covenant. In other words, it sort of gets expanded or explained. So, for example, the land. Abraham is promised land. Later on, you'll get the dimensions of the land. So we'll see all of that later on. But if you want to read ahead, Genesis chapter 12, but I will tell you what I want you to do. Read verse 1 through 40, which sounds strange, but I'm going to use verses 4 through 20, of Genesis. In other words, read Genesis chapter 12, 1 through 20, because what we're going to see there is the giving of the covenant, and then I'm going to give you an example of how it's an unconditional covenant, and we'll see an example of that, okay? But anyway, let's take your handout. Let's just do a little bit of an overview and kind of get an idea. This is the same format that we used for the Noahic one. So I quoted there Genesis chapter 12 and verse 2. And I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. So that's part of the Abrahamic covenant. Now, the way that I'll present it, like I said, we'll look at Roman numeral 1, and I'll give it a little bit of an overview of those 11 chapters of Genesis. We'll see the setting of Abraham's life, and then we'll look at what is a covenant, where it's found, unconditional or conditional, the parties. And then we'll look at the contents of the covenant in the study, at least. And then we'll see, if you remember when we had the Abrahamic covenant or the Noahic covenant, there was a sign was given as part of it. We'll see that the Abrahamic covenant also has a sign, and I give you that in letter A there. It says circumcision. So just to kind of get familiar with, that's what we'll be doing, following a similar flow to the Noahic covenant. All right, so let's take a little bit of time, though. Look at Roman numeral 1, and on the back of the page, you can take notes. If you don't want to, then, of course, that's fine. But there's a place on the back of the handout for notes. if that's what you want to do. But let's look at the introduction, because we need to understand, I think it'll be at least helpful to understand the setting. So I'll spend a little bit of time here with this, but hopefully it'll help understand why God gave it. And I think the background will help. So as we start looking at a summary of Genesis 1 through 11, you may or may not know some of this. If you don't know it, it'll be new information for you. If you know it, it should be just refresher information, okay? Because everybody may not know. But if you don't know this, Genesis is typically divided into two main portions. In other words, if you think of the book of Genesis, there's 50 chapters, and it's really in two parts. That's the way to think of it. The first 11 chapters deal with the world as a whole, in a sense, okay? But then in Genesis 12, God will, and I'll show you this a little bit in a few minutes and in the next few weeks, God is going to then shift in Genesis 12 forward, even into Exodus and so forth, with the nation of Israel. In other words, he's going to focus in on Abraham. And through Abraham, we'll see where the storyline sort of narrows down to the nation of Israel. So I don't know if that will be helpful for you, but again, Genesis 1 through 11, an easy way to think of it is it's universal. But then in Genesis 12 through the end, it zeroes in on Abraham and Abraham's descendants. So Genesis 1 through 3, probably most of us know that. That's the account of the week of creation. You have the fall of man. But in Genesis 3:15, there's the promise of a redeemer. Okay, and at that point, it's going to come through Eve, which is so broad because there is nobody at that time. Okay, but remember that God, even though there was sin, is still going to fulfill his purposes, okay? So Genesis 3:15, he promises a redeemer. And you'll see where this fits with the story of Genesis, in particular with Abraham. Now, in chapters 4 and 5, if you remember, when we looked at the Noahic covenant, it doesn't take long for sin to begin to spread, does it? So you have in Genesis 1 through 3, the account of creation. You have the fall, God's promise that I will have a redeemer through Eve, and then he kicks them out of Eden, okay? And then it doesn't take long, and you have in Genesis 4, do you know what happens there? Cain and Abel, you have murder. So it doesn't take long, and sin begins to spread. And sin becomes so bad, and it's deteriorating the culture, and mankind becomes fully corrupt, that God finally brings what? You remember the flood, okay? It gets so bad that God has to intervene and he has to bring judgment, which brings us to chapter 6 through 10, which is the account in very detailed form of the actual judgment, which is the flood. But is the flood the end of God's story? In other words, God had promised in Genesis 3:15 that he's going to bring a redeemer. He's going to redeem man's greatest problem, which is not taxes, it's not the economy, it's sin. And he's still going to fulfill that promise. And if you remember the Noahic covenant, what's important about that is God starts over with Noah. You have Noah and his three sons. And so God starts over with that. Now, does anyone remember when we looked at Genesis, what chapter the Noahic covenant was in? It's in Genesis 9, okay? So if you remember, the flood comes, God starts over with Noah's family, and shortly after they get off, there's a sacrifice made, and God makes that Noahic, if you will, promise. And so God starts over with them. Now, I want us to look at, if you have your Bibles, Genesis chapter 11. Now, I'm not going to go too far with this, but again, the storyline of the Bible, if it helps you, you've got creation. God's creation has been marred by sin, both the physical creation as well as humanity. That helps. God says, I'm going to remedy the problem myself through a redeemer that will come one day. So then, of course, sin gets so bad, God has to judge, but God still has to fulfill his promises. So we have to start over. He does through Noah. And he gives Noah a covenant, that rainbow and those sorts of things we looked at. But Genesis chapter 11 is an interesting one. I won't spend too much time. I don't want to get us off track too much here. But what you have here is the Tower of, remember, Babble, babble. What's babble mean? Nonsense, right? Well, that's kind of the idea of what we get from that, the Tower of Babel. You know, you say, talk about somebody, man, Stephen, he babbled for 45 minutes on Sunday after the service, or during the service, depending on your perspective. But that's the idea of Genesis 11, verses 1 through 9. But I want someone to read verses 1, or chapter 11, verse 9 for me in just a minute. Genesis 11 will set the stage for a couple of things, but in particular, how it relates to Abraham. So God starts over, and God has told Noah and his descendants to do what? Be fruitful and fill the earth. Now, did they do that initially? Nope. Not like they were supposed to. And so God is going to, through that event at the Tower of Babel, if you will, force them to go out and spread, and we end up with all these multiple tribes, tongues, and languages. Do you ever wonder where we end up with all these ethnicities from? You have the answer in verses 1 through 9 of Genesis 11. That's how we end up with the spreading of all of these nations, tribes, tongues, and nations. So someone read Genesis 11, 9 for me.
Therefore, its name was called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of the whole earth. And from there, the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of the whole earth.
All right. So the word Babel means confusion. And so God is going to take, if you will, those who have been born through the descendants of Noah, and he's going to force them, if you will, in other words, and they spread. They begin to populate. But God promised that through the descendants of course, Eve and Noah, that he would bring about a redeemer. So the simple story is this. God has started over through the descendants of Noah. One particular descendant was giving a blessing. Does anyone remember which of Noah's three sons? Shem, that's right, Dave. So that's Genesis 9:26. If you look at Genesis 9:26, this is the interesting, what we call it, postlude, where Noah wakes up and you probably know the story. He gets drunk and there is a curse, but then there is a blessing in Genesis 9:26. Says, blessed be the Lord, the God of Shem, and let Canaan be his servant. So there's this blessing upon Shem. He's of Noah's three sons. The lineage of the Redeemer will now come through the line of Shem, just in simple terms. That's what we have. And so as we look at chapter 11, verses 10 through really the rest of the chapter, what you have is the genealogy that takes you from Shem. So think of it this way. You've got Noah, Shem, and then you have, interestingly enough, Abraham's father. A lot of times when you start a study of Abraham, people start in Genesis 12. You need to kind of back up and punt a little bit to get the full grasp of the story. And so that's how we're going to see the setting of Abraham's life. God has started over. It's the Redeemer is going to be narrowed through the lineage of Shem. Through Shem will eventually come Abraham. Of course, he's going to be called Abram at this time. I needed an adventurous soul to read verses 27 through 32. Of Genesis 11, that'll give us the setting, the family, the descendants, which will eventually give us the ancestry of Abraham. Will somebody read that for me?
27 to 32?
Yes, sir.
All right. Now these are the records of the generation of Terah. Terah became the father of Abram, Nahor, and Haran. And Haran. And Haran became the father of Lot. Haran died in the presence of his father Terah in the land of his birth, and Ur of the Chaldeans. Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it.
Very good with all this. Yeah. Yep. You get an A for reading today.
I cheat. I push the play button and memorize.
Yeah, there's a couple of those ones too that are like, bleh. But yeah, that's I appreciate you doing that. So I mentioned that verses 27 through 32 because in order to help us understand when Abraham is giving the covenant, and I'm going to use the term Abraham, so I know it's Abram, and then later on we'll see where the name changes actually in the covenant text later. But what we see here is very simply you have Terah has three sons, and one of them is Abram. So these verses here that Mike just read, that gives you the background to where Abraham comes. So if you want to think of it in a linear line, if this helps, you have Eve. You eventually have Shem. In other words, you have Noah, then you have Shem, and then you have Abraham's father, and then the father being, of course, of Abraham is Terah. And so that's that lineage, that thread that the Redeemer is going to come through. So what is God doing here? Well, he's doing several things. But the main thing to think of here is that God is narrowing down where this blessing, this promise, this Redeemer, and all of those things are going to come through. In other words, he's got to pick someone. Does that make sense? I mean, it can't be that he comes through every nation, tribe, and tongue. He's got to zero in. And so this is the backdrop to how we end up with all of these, not nations necessarily, but the specific blessing. I'm going to read you something. Comes from Thomas Constable's notes. He says, he's speaking of the genealogy here. He says, this genealogy starts with Noah's son, Shem, whom God blessed, and it concludes with Abram, whom God purposed to bless. This is the line of Israel's ancestry, and that's what he's saying there. So this line is taking us from Noah to Shem through the ancestry of what will be Abraham and the nation of Israel. And so the setting of the Abrahamic covenant, I would put it this way, is the world after the flood and the Tower of Babel. And the interesting thing is, as I told you before, Genesis chapters 1 through 11, they focus on humanity at large. Starting in Genesis 12, who is he focused on? Meaning God's revelation. It's on what we'll think of as Abraham and eventually the nation of Israel. So now God is zeroing in on where this blessing will come from. Now let me ask you, is God's plan of redemption, was it negated because of all the sin before or after the flood? Of course not. When God makes a promise, and in particular, if it's an unconditional promise, in other words, everything hinges on God, it's going to happen. The conditional covenants, when man has some sort of part to play in it, there's no guarantee it's going to always work, will it? But when God makes a promise or a covenant, which they're sort of synonymous of one another, the wording, we can be assured it's going to be fulfilled because there's no strings attached for you and I to fulfill. I'm going to read you something, and I found this as a helpful, and then we're going to look at Roman numeral 2. So that kind of gives us a broad setting. God starts over, he's going to redeem fallen creation itself, along with the offspring of Noah. Then we have Shem, we have Abraham's father, and now Abraham has been slightly introduced a little bit. Let me read you something I think that's interesting. This commentator says, without the blessing of God, the situation of humanity is without hope. That seems to be the chief thrust of the opening chapters of Genesis. And that's probably true. It's a fair statement, at least. Because if you think about it right now, at the end of Genesis 11, what do we have? Hopelessness. Because man has filled the earth. If you look at the time historically, these massive amounts of time occur and humanity is hopeless. But God's going to intervene to give this promise through this man, Abraham, or Abram. Now let's look at Roman numeral 2. So we've kind of covered the setting, and hopefully we're good on the setting. Is everybody pretty good there? It's the world after the flood. It's after the Tower of Babel, after God has forced, in a sense, man and humanity to begin to populate the earth like they were originally supposed to and subdue it. You have all these tribes, tongues, and nations, and now God has decided by his own self that he's going to focus in on what we think of as Abraham and his descendants. And that's really the storyline of the Bible in that sense. But let's look at Roman numeral 2. So we've kind of covered the general setting here. Let's cover a couple of things here. Where is the covenant found? Now, I'm guilty of this sometimes for shorthand. Notice the verses, though. Let me read them to you. Genesis 12, 1 through 3. That would be where it's initially instituted. In other words, that's where it's originally given. That's the original core of the covenant. But then in Genesis 13, 14 through 17, more is given. Okay, so you think of, you've got the core of it. This is just my wording, if it helps. You have the core in Genesis 1 through 3. Then God will, if you will, reaffirm. He'll add to it. In other words, he'll expand it a little bit and confirm it a little bit more. In other words, give more details to it. So it's Genesis 12, 1 through 3. That would be the key one. And then Genesis 13, 14 through 17. Genesis 15, 1 through 7. And then Genesis 17, 1 through 8. And what we'll end up with is this plethora of details that expand off of that original instruction. Let me read you something. This is Michael Vlock's book. It's entitled "He Will Reign Forever," and he makes this comment about the Abrahamic covenant. And I want you to listen to him because I think he gets this really well. God's kingdom program involves the Abrahamic covenant, but listen to the rest. Details of this covenant are revealed progressively through the rest of the book of Genesis, but the foundation of the covenant is given in Genesis 12, 1 through 3. Does that make sense? Thought it might help a little bit. Genesis 1 through 3, that is the main one, because you'll even hear me. I tend to just say that's where it is. It's shorthand, because that's true. But as Vlock says, what happens is God progressively reveals more. You know, that's how God oftentimes reveals many things in Scripture. He doesn't reveal everything all at once. We're not as smart as we might like to think. We can't always handle everything at once, can we? God progressively throughout the Bible reveals more and more. And in many ways, I'll tell you if this helps a little bit. When a person comes to faith in Jesus, they don't know very much about the Bible, do they? God, through the Holy Spirit, progressively, what does he do? Does he not add knowledge? Well, yes, as long as you're reading his word and that sort of thing. But sort of the same idea, okay? It gets expanded and added onto. What is a covenant? I'm going to give you a definition. And if you have a better definition, as I like to say, when it's your turn to teach, you use your definition. Okay, but this one is one, and I'm going to use it to sort of segue into the next piece. So what is a covenant? A covenant is a promise between two or more parties to perform certain actions. But notice the ending of this. A covenant might be conditional or unconditional. Let me read it again. What is a covenant? A covenant is a promise between two or more parties to perform certain actions. A covenant might be conditional or unconditional. Okay, and I mentioned the word covenant and promise. Sometimes if you have a study Bible or you read somebody's books on covenants or God's promises, sometimes they're synonymous of one another. And it's true in many ways. The only caveat that I tend to give with that is as long as it's unconditional. God's promises, and when God makes an unconditional promise, what can we be certain of? It will happen because God is the one who holds all the cards. And if God gives us his word and his promise, do you think God's going to fulfill it? Sure. So just keep that in mind. Now let's make sure we're clear here. The Abrahamic covenant and the Noahic covenant are both unconditional. I'm going to, as we study, I'll show you how to see it. I mean, the Noahic one's pretty obvious. I mean, he just tells you there's no strings attached, as I like to call it. But let me make sure we're clear on these two terms because they're going to pop up in the scripture and you need to know what they are. So the first is, what's a conditional covenant? I'll give you what my wording is. A conditional covenant would be one where God would keep his part of the covenant, i.e. promise, if the other person keeps theirs. Let me read it again. A conditional covenant would be one where God would keep his part, notice, of the covenant, i.e. promise, if the other person keeps theirs. I will make coffee in the morning if Merritt fills up my water pitcher. It's not the best one because I can tell you I like coffee so much, I'm still going to do it. But you see what that is? That's where I use their strings attached. And that's what we would call it today. It's a little bit, you know, silly of a comment. But again, a covenant is a promise that God says. And God's saying, I'm going to do this if you do this. If you do this, you can bank on that I'm going to do my part. Again, God's part isn't the problem with conditional covenants. Those problems are always ours. You'll see that with, I think, the Davidic covenant and things like that, where man's failure makes problems with it. But when they're all on God's promises, we're good to go. So an unconditional covenant would be this. An unconditional covenant is different in that it depends on God, which ensures it will be fulfilled. That's just my wording. Let me read it again. A conditional covenant is different in that everything depends on God, which ensures it will be fulfilled. So what's the difference? And conditional covenant, God has a part in it, but so do you and I. If we fail on our part, God has no responsibility to do his part. If we do our part, we can be sure of his. I'm focusing on God's because that should encourage us to do what he tells us to do. Because if we do what he tells us to do, God's promises are already a check that have been signed. We just have to deposit it. Does that make sense? So that's what it is. So an unconditional one is just simply one that we can be sure of. And what you're going to find is the Abrahamic covenant is an unconditional one. And I can prove it to you in Genesis 12 next week. Because that's why I want you to read verses 4 through 20. Because what you'll see is Abraham is given this promise. I mean, it's to me probably the most paramount of the promises in the Bible and the covenants, in the sense of it sets the trajectory for everything that will lead us to Jesus. But then Abraham, based off of that promise, goes and he manipulates a situation, and you can see where he needs to grow in his faith. That's what we'll look at next week. But before we do that, in Roman numeral 2, we've looked at where it's found. It's primarily Genesis 1 through 3, and then it gets expanded on progressively. So, for instance, the details and the dimensions of the land, God says, test me and see if I can't be that specific. So he gets very specific with the boundaries, and you'll find out that there is no debate today on who owns the land. God gave it to the nation of Israel. And then we'll see, we've already looked at what is a covenant. I've already given that. What is a conditional or unconditional? What parties benefit from the Abrahamic covenant? Yeah, it's amazing. I think we'd forget this. I'll give you three, and this is how we'll look at it next week. It starts with a person in Abraham. Out of all those people, is given a promise, so he's got a part in it. In other words, he's a party, and his name is going to be made great. Everything's going to flow through this man of obscurity, if you will. Two, the nation of Israel. This is where the nation of Israel comes into play. So we have the starting point here that'll lead us to the kings and so forth. And then three is the one we all think of, right? The Gentiles. In other words, it's universal in scope. That's why I think this one is, not to make light of the Noahic one. The Noahic one is a great one. All of them are. They're God's promises. But this one, I think, is just such an eclipsing one because it has implications for you and I as well today. So the parties that benefit, you can think of it as Abraham. In other words, the person, the individual. Is his name great? You know the little kids sing about him. the nation of Israel, this is where the origin comes from. And then we'll see the Gentiles, in other words, worldwide, in other words. That's where we get into Jesus. So I would encourage you, though, to read next week. If you don't read the covenant piece, that's fine. Read verses 4 through 20. Because it's one of the best evidences I can give you that the promises of God don't hinge on us always being perfect, thankfully. Okay, let me give you a couple of things you can think of as some takeaways. First one is, even amid humanity's sin and failure, God continued to work out his plan of redemption. Amen? We'd be in trouble if everything hinged on us, wouldn't we? Two, be encouraged by God's faithfulness as seen in moving from the bleakness and despair of Genesis 11 to the blessing of Genesis 12. God's going to go from the bleakness, I call it despair, because there's no hope, to a specific line of hope. And then finally, the Abrahamic covenant is unconditional. I'm going to prove it to you, because there are some that say it's conditional, meaning it depends entirely on God. It serves as a good reminder to trust in the promises of God, because he will most surely fulfill them. Okay, that covers everything I wanted.